Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Glenn and Helen Show, where we're talking about the spread of contagious diseases and contagious ideas.
Today we're going to be talking to Senator Bill Frist about the avian flu and what the government is doing to prepare for it.
Also, we're going to have some on-the-spot interviews with a variety of bloggers recorded at CPAC last weekend, where they'll give their views on what's going on in the blogosphere and the world.
Stay tuned!
There's good news and bad news about avian flu. The good news is that right now it mostly only affects birds. The bad news is that birds fly all over the world, and so the stuff spreads. The good news is not many people have gotten it. The bad news is the people who have gotten it die about half the time. What people are worried about is that avian flu will mutate from a form that really only infects birds and people who come into close contact with birds into a form that can spread from person to person, as flu generally does. A worldwide epidemic of avian flu would be very serious and is something we'd really like to avoid.
The avian flu started in Asia, and it spread as far west as Germany, Iran, and Austria. So far, the virus has killed 91 people worldwide. That's hardly an epidemic, but it could be. Let's talk to Bill Frist and see what he thinks.
Well, we're real happy to have you with us here and talk about avian flu. That's actually something I've written about a good deal on my blog, Instapundit. And it raises a lot of questions in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
So, Senator Frist, how big a threat is the avian flu to the American public?
Avian flu is a threat in the sense that we are not prepared today in the event it struck. We have worked aggressively to become more prepared over the last year and a half, but with a lack of a vaccine, with a lack of a local understanding of what appropriate response is, we are woefully unprepared today. It's a virus that can't be seen, can't be smelled, can't be tasted, travels faster, and is more infectious than HIV or the SARS virus, and has a high mortality that is about 50% today, although it will likely fall to slightly lower than that. Progress has been made in terms of federal efforts, but we need to make sure that that translates down to the local level, and we need to increase our ability to shorten that time from what I call bug to drug of identifying what that avian flu virus is, the fingerprint, to the time you have a drug or a vaccine that can be they can be distributed and applied appropriately for either protection or treatment.
I know that Ray Kurzweil has called for a massive movement to develop a very rapid response program for all sorts of infectious diseases. And is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Absolutely. I've called for a Manhattan project approach where you take the very best of our federal, state, and local government, coupled with the private sector, coupled with the nonprofit sector, focused on shortening that time from both bug to drug and then also drug to administration of that drug. Without it, it will be years before we are adequately prepared for a pandemic that is inevitable. It is inevitable that we're going to have another pandemic. I would argue that we are no better prepared today than we were in 1918 when the avian flu pandemic at that time killed more people in 6 weeks than have died of HIV/AIDS in the last 25 years.
Senator Frist, why are we so unprepared? Is it government? Is it what's the reason?
The lack of preparation stems from a loss of manufacturing capacity in this country, where in the 1960s we had 26 people making, or 26 entities making vaccines, and now we're down to 3 in this country. In large part, that is due to the lawsuit abuse and litigation lotteries that have resulted from an out-of-control tort reform lawsuit abuse system. In part, it is a false sense of feeling prepared for infectious disease when the Surgeon General 40 years ago said that the era of infectious disease is over. And it's a new realization that it is not over, and that we are even more defenseless in a time of just-in-time delivery, where our entire economy is dependent upon rapid delivery systems, which, if interrupted, can result in severe dislocations of our economy.
Yeah, you've talked about the extent of economic damage an avian flu outbreak might cause. Should we be looking at hardening up infrastructure as well to prepare for that and other kinds of catastrophes?
I think the good news about investment in and fighting and responding to avian flu is that there is a dual purpose for other infectious diseases that could occur, whether they are accidental, intentional, or deliberate, and namely bioterrorism. We are also underprepared in this country to fight a release of an infectious agent such as smallpox or a modified smallpox linked to something like Ebola virus today. So the dual investment in terms of infrastructure, in terms of preparation, in terms of science, in terms of first response, it makes it a wise investment for us in government today.
What can the private citizen do about the avian flu? I mean, should we stockpile food? I mean, do you have any tips for private citizens if there was an outbreak?
Yeah, because avian flu moves so quickly, again, much quicker than any of the other viruses that people are familiar with or have heard about that have caused much destruction in the past. It is incumbent upon individuals to do several things. First, encourage right now, through letters to the editor, through calls to radio, through demands or requests from their local officials, that there be a community-wide response on paper that is well understood throughout their community. And I'm always surprised that when I go into communities, they do not have a specific avian flu response plan. At the same time, we've seen avian flu spreading across the world, moving our way, in particular in animals, but also in humans. Secondly, in terms of understanding what an individual needs to do, we know that part of the response is going to be minimizing social contacts. And if that is to be fulfilled, it means that people will have to be able to have sufficient supplies of medicines and food and water in their home for as long as a week or 2 weeks. And those who are on prescription drugs need that extra supply of prescription drugs. And those who are thinking in terms of food need to ask, do I have sufficient foods? And then third, and I even hate to mention it, but it is something that people need to think about, and that is to make sure that they have their wills advanced directives for end-of-life issues in order. And that's almost tragic that I have to say that. But if you look at what happened in 1918 and also to some extent in the two pandemics since that time, things happen very quickly, unexpectedly, and if you're not prepared, the time passes by.
Make sure you have your will in order. That's not real encouraging advice.
No. Now, look, the good news, though, is that I and other officials in Washington, D.C., led by President Bush, are aggressively addressing this issue. We put over $4.5 billion in prevention and preparedness and response efforts 2 months ago, appropriated by our federal government. The president will make a request here in the next 4 to 6 weeks for a second installment to fight avian flu. We've responded with legislation that has offered appropriate targeted liability protections for the first responders who are administering a vaccine or a drug, if you have the avian flu, for the scientists who are figuring out the drug itself, the thumbprint of the drug, as well as manufacturers. Those protections only take place if there is an emergency, declared emergency, by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. But So protections are important because it will allow our manufacturing base to be reconstructed so that we will have sufficient medicines to treat you, your family, people listening in the event there is an emergency. Right now we don't have that vaccine, but because of the action of our government, we will rebuild that manufacturing base.
And that's been a criticism, actually, of some of these proposals, I believe, is some people said it's kind of a giveaway to drug companies. Do you want to address that?
Absolutely, because if there is one single thing that our government can do to protect the safety and security of the American people in response to an infectious disease or a bioterror agent which will infiltrate our schools and our communities, it is to rebuild the manufacturing base to have drugs available to treat or prevent those infectious diseases from killing. The vaccine and counter-terror measures that were put in apply only in the event there is an emergency, as spelled out by our government.
Well, thank you so much. We're great beneficiaries of modern pharmaceutical technology ourselves. Helen's on a anti-arrhythmic drug called Tecasin that she just loves.
Yeah, it is amazing. As a physician and as a doctor who spent 20 years in medicine, in science, and in infectious disease, because my transplant patients would be impacted primarily by infectious disease, it is gratifying to me to see the tremendous progress that we're making in terms of drugs, medicines, pharmaceutical agents, therapies, and devices which improve the quality of life of all Americans.
Bring it on. And thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you both. Great to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I like gadgets, and my latest gadget is a little Olympus digital voice recorder.
We took it with us to the CPAC conference, wandered around, and talked to different bloggers and people of interest. Here's what they had to say.
Yeah, I'm sitting here with Little Miss Attila. What's your real name? You're out of the closet now, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Joy McCann.
That's great. And how long have you been blogging?
About 3 years. I started right before we invaded Iraq, and it felt like that was a time that I wanted to weigh in and maybe see if I could change some of my friends' minds.
Did it work?
No, but it made them think a little bit, which is almost as important.
That's worth something.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in blogging mostly for the big bucks, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Party.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, until I came out here to D.C., I was in the black by $40, and it was very, very significant.
Well, that's better than a lot of Internet enterprises.
Right. Of course, I'm hosted at mu.mu, so I'm getting subsidized.
Ah, yes, the Manuvian Empire.
Exactly.
So what do you like most about blogging?
The fact that there are people who are like-minded and I can connect with them, and I feel like I'm sort of tapped into the best and the brightest, and it's a wonderful way to get to know people who are really, really intelligent. And number two, there's an immediacy to it.
Yeah.
You get feedback right away. It's not like publishing something and then a few months later somebody calls you and says, you know, that was a really provocative piece.
That's certainly true. I find that, you know, when you write law review articles, you write them and a year later they appear.
Right, and it's all over by then. You're really doing something for the record.
Yeah, the immediacy is gone. Yeah, blogging's great that way. So how many other bloggers have you met here?
Oh, goodness. I've spent a lot of time. I'm staying at the same hotel with a lot of the Cotillion babes, or a couple of the Cotillion babes. So girl on the right is there, who's just also come out of the closet, Wendy Sullivan, and Wonder Woman, who's North American patriot. And then last night, the pub across the street, too many to count.
Oh.
A lot of Canadians here also.
That's interesting. Well, the Canadians, it's been a big year for the Canadians.
It really has been. It's really amazing. Fun to watch.
So do you feel like you fit in with the CPAC crowd in general?
This is great. I'm having a wonderful time. But the main problem is actually getting some work done.
Oh, yeah.
In between.
Yeah, I noticed that we're sitting here in Bloggers Row, and there are a lot of empty laptops because I guess people are out circulating.
I think so. Of course, it's, you know, probably a late lunch for a few of them.
Well, thanks for talking with me. Do you have any words for your fans?
No. Charge.
Thanks. So I'm at Bloggers Row with Joel Miller, author of Size Matters and also Bad Trip, an anti-drug war book. But you almost wound up having to argue in favor of the drug war. Now tell us what happened.
Well, the person who was supposedly going to take the panel and argue in favor of prohibition ended up needing to back out for whatever reason. And I thought, you know, it might be interesting to get in on this debate. At the time, I didn't quite realize that I would be arguing in the opposite of my opinion. It all ended up shaking out that they found someone else to fill in, but I very closely came to having to stand up there and announce myself as a hypocrite to the world.
Well, you know, hypocrisy is a tribute that vice pays to virtue, right? So,
amen. And nothing could be finer than drugs and vice, so it all went together.
So how are you liking the whole CPAC event?
It's a very busy, tiring place. I've been on my feet for now a couple days, and I'm really worn out.
For listeners who don't know, Joel Miller is my editor, and he's also an author with a book that just came out. That's the Size Matters book. So he's actually around here doing the same kind of crap I'm doing, the same exciting things that I'm doing, while also trying to shepherd me around and see that things go well. And he looks remarkably clean-shaven and well-dressed for a guy who writes about drug legalization. Shouldn't you be wearing hemp or something?
Well, I thought about the whole hemp suit, but, you know, it doesn't hold a pleat very well. So,
I hate that.
Yeah, it's rough.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm interviewing Sean Hagbarth of The American Mind, who's here at CPAC. And how are you liking it?
Oh, this is great. It's my second year here as a web blogger covering it. I just have a lot of fun.
How well do you fit in with the CPAC crowd?
I fit pretty well. Most issues I'm the mainstream conservative. There are some differing, I have some differing views than some of the more extreme people, especially on immigration. I think the people who want to build a fence and think that and keep out all the immigrants, they think that's the solution. I don't see that. I disagree with them.
Somebody told me here that there are a lot of people dancing around criticism of the president. Is that your impression or not?
I haven't noticed that, but this is a place where conservatives come together to support their policies, and we like the fact that the more conservative of the two parties is in power. So I'm sure they might be dancing around a little bit, but I think that's not necessarily, that's just because of the group. Because we're all kind of the same. I'm around the same side, although we have differences with the president.
So why do you blog? Is it for the money and the chicks?
Well, I'm still looking for both. I started it. I've been posting for 6 years, and I found out about these weblogs, and I figured, hey, I have an opportunity to write what I want and have someone read it, other than just me doing it on a piece of paper and maybe sending it into a newspaper and having some editor decide if they want to get it, put it in a paper.
It rocks, doesn't it?
It does. It's great. I just wish I had more readers, but we all do.
TheAmericanMind.com.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you. So I've got Chris Nolan of spot-on.com, isn't it?
It is spot-on.com. Spot-on.com wasn't available.
Oh.
I tried.
And, you know, I hate to give out the wrong URL because you never know what people will land on.
And you never know what people are going to land on, but it is spot-on.com.
So what brings you here to CPAC?
I come here every year. I was here a year ago. I come to see what's going on with conservative bloggers. I come to see what's going on with the conservative movement. I come because this is Washington, where I work professionally for a number of years. I come because I have family here. But mostly just to kind of get a sense of what people are talking about other than on their sites. I mean, most people's websites are only a portion of their personality and a small part of what they do and what they think. So it's nice to come and see folks like LaShawn and Sean and just, you know, chat. And, of course, to see you.
So what are you seeing this time?
I was saying this at lunch. This feels like a slightly nastier gathering. And I don't mean that to be cruel or pointed, but the rhetoric has ratcheted up a little bit from last year.
Really?
Yeah. It could be that I have, as a card-carrying liberal from San Francisco, a little more sensitivity on the immigration issue, which is really kind of front and center here.
That seems to be one of the hot issues.
Yeah. It could be that I'm just a little more attuned to how that actually works on a day-to-day basis because I live in San Francisco and in California. But it does seem to be that the rhetoric on that and on gay marriage family stuff is ratcheted up a bit higher than it was last year. So I'm not sure why that that is partially, I think there's a dissatisfaction among conservatives with the way the president has been handling something. And that may be spilling over into other issues.
So how are you received as a liberal blogger at CPAC?
Well, last year everybody was more than gracious. And this year they're just nice. I'm sort of old news, I think. It's like, oh, her again.
So do you think last year they were just basking in the afterglow of the election?
A little, yeah. I think that there was a sense that, you know, they were on a roll. And I think this year the delay stuff has really put a crimp in people's style. I think there's real concern about what's going to happen with the House. I don't think, and I said this on the site, I've said it repeatedly, I don't think that the House or the Senate will change hands and become Democratic this year, but I think there are going to be some very, very hard races out there that were not anticipated, and that might be
right.
Some of what we're seeing.
So. Well, you can only bask in the afterglow for 1 year, right?
Well, I think everybody was expecting a good long, you know, Reagan back 8 years, you know, here we go again.
Well, Reagan's second term was no prize either. People forget that now.
Well, second
full of scandals and, you know, all kinds of issues.
Yeah.
So, any final words for your fans out there?
Keep reading. And keep reading. Don't forget Instapundit.
Okay, thanks.
Even conservatives seem to regard this as a freak show. And that is the most amusing thing that I've discovered.
So that's the Anne Marie Cox take on CPAC.
I didn't call it a freak show. I'm saying that people who would probably not like to go on record, but who seem to be of the cause. There's someone nodding right here.
Have you ever been to a convention that wasn't?
No, of course. Freak show. I mean, this is like, it's like a Trekkie show, too. I mean, like anything, any fanatics are freaks. I mean, I think that in a good way. I mean, I believe that I'm a freak in many different ways, although not in the way that would be welcome here. Or who knows, maybe later after some drinks, that kind of freakishness would
start. So have you been welcomed here?
Yeah, people are really nice. It's funny because I've been sort of palling around with Tom Frank. Not so welcome. Not as welcome, Mr. Frank, here.
Are you going to do a book on what's the matter with CPAC?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he won't tell me what he's working on. He keeps on making up various things that like to throw me off. Like he's writing a book about a young blogger, a female blogger, and her husband.
What a great idea.
And, and like how like he's really erudite and interesting, and she's out to like bring down the discourse of the mainstream, and you know.
No, nobody would believe that.
Yeah, no one would buy that. And I don't know what bloggers are talking about because I'm not a blogger anymore. Really.
And how's that? Been in withdrawal for a while? Or?
Yeah, I actually can't quit it. You know,
really?
Like I've been doing a weekly rep. Well, I just started doing something for One Cat. Back at One Cat, and then also I won't give anyone the URL, but I do have a baby panda blog.
Oh, okay.
It's my secret passion for Butterstick. Not so secret passion for Butterstick, the baby panda has taken shape of a blog.
Well, I won't reveal your secret URL if I ever learn it.
Right, no, please. It's because it's a real labor of love, as opposed to other blogs, you know, or at least for me, my previous blogs were simply whoring myself. So.
Oh, well, it's always nice to stop whoring yourself and do something you like.
Yeah.
So here with LaShawn Barber of LaShawnBarber.com. So this is not your first time at CPAC, is it?
No, this is my second year. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm meeting a lot more bloggers. It's just a great time.
How would you compare this year's CPAC to last?
Well, in some ways, this is better. I like the hotel. It's better to navigate. We have a lot more room. But last year, they fed us.
Oh, my goodness.
And this year, we have to buy our own lunch and our own dinner.
Now, I talked to somebody else who said they thought the atmosphere last year was warmer and happier than this year. And I put it down to the afterglow of the election. But maybe it was the food.
Well, you know, I think it has a lot to do with the lighting. We're sort of down in the basement now. And in the Reagan building, there was, you know, a lot more light, a lot more windows. So I think maybe that had a lot to do with the move.
Oh, atmospheric.
Yeah.
So do you have any final words for your fans out there?
Oh, my fans, thanks for reading LaShawn Barber's Corner. I encourage you to visit every day. Visit my business blog, The Language Artist, and my hobby blog, Fantasy Fiction for Christians.
My goodness, it's a blog-o-rama.
Yep, I'm a blog advocate.
Thank you. Tell us your name and tell us why you're supporting Americans for Rice.
My name is Wes Fowler. I'm the Illinois Chair of Americans for Dr. Rice. And I'm supporting Dr. Rice because she has been the best diplomat and representative of the U.S. around the world. She's done so much to help our developed countries she stood up to people like Boris Yeltsin.
Do you think she's going to run?
I think if she hears the call, she will serve her country. I think if we put out a groundswell of support, that she will heed the call. We're comparing our campaign to the I Like Ike campaign, where, you know, he wasn't really thinking about running until, you know, we have our buttons here, I Like Ike, I Like Condi, until he heard the call of the people. And then he said, I will serve the American people, I will run for president. Because the people called him, and I think that Condi, we can make an analogy with Condi the same way. She's never run for office. She's right. But she has the experience to be the president. She's had experience in the George H.W. Bush administration. She was the foreign policy tutor for George W. Bush. She is now the Secretary of State. And she has been able to hold the line against such dictatorships as Iran and North Korea. She's working on a strategy right now called transformational diplomacy, where she goes to third world countries and instructs them on how to run a proper running democracy, about free elections, what goes on, and how.
What do you think the chances are there'll be a Hillary versus Condi, Ray?
I'm glad you asked me about that. Okay. On our website, you can find this. You can find links to the Gallup polls and Zogby polls. Right now, Condi is running 14-1 chances that she will be the Republican presidential nominee. McCain is at 7-1. Hillary is at 4-1 about being the Democratic presidential nominee. So it's not a bunch of ragtag shoestring, you know, people just, you know, with a small pipe dream. It may have started out that way, but it's a credible possibility. If you look at the Zogby polls, they're linked on pollingreport.com. They consistently use her as a possible GOP candidate, and they run the polls. If Condi were the Republican nominee, and Kerry or Hillary were the Democratic nominee, who would you vote for? Condi beats both of them hands down. They also have like other possibilities: McCain, Giuliani, Frist. So it's a whole spectrum of different candidates, and they're putting her name out there as a possible candidate. So clearly, we're not the only ones that think this is a credible possibility. And
what is your response to your website? Do you get people writing in, or
we have about 4,000 people who have like registered with our website, just as, you know, general interest and that kind of thing. We are consistently getting a lot of hits on our website, especially after this weekend, and our response has been overwhelming. Absolutely overwhelming.
Well, we're going to have to stop now. Is there anything else, Glenn, you'd like to ask?
It's AmericansForRice.com, right?
It's AmericansForRice.com. Here's our card if you want to take a look at it.
Great.
We've been told we were the hit of the convention.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tell us your name and why you're here.
My name is Muhammad Ali Hassan, and we're here because we want to add to the conservative, libertarian, and Republican movement, and we want to show everyone here that there's people of color and minority voices that can be a part of this movement and that can enhance it.
Tell us more about the Muslims for America.
Well, what we started out as Muslims for Bush, and we worked very hard in election 2004, not only to get Muslims to vote for President Bush, but to also allow other Republicans to say that there were Muslims who supported President Bush, and allow for a website that could have proof of the great things President Bush is doing for Muslims in America and around the world. Now, as Muslims for America right now, we're working very hard to build strong bridges between the Republican National Committee and Muslims here in America. We're working hard to create Muslim-American Republican caucuses that allow for Republican officials running for statewide and national office to come and speak directly and interface with American Muslims community by community. We are becoming a nonpartisan group, though, so we are going to start encouraging work with every single political party. Our main message is, one thing that frustrates us is it seems like a lot of Muslims in America want to, I don't want to say complain, but they want to say, I don't want to support this particular political party because they don't agree with me. Our message is now, listen, a political party isn't going to come to you and say, okay, we agree with you. It's going to happen once you work with that party, once you add a voice to that party, and once you change that party. So whether it's Republican, Democrat, Green Party, Libertarian, we are starting to encourage Muslims to create caucuses with any party. to work with that party, to become a voice for that party. And if we have a strong Muslim voice in every American party, this creates a better America, and that's the best thing we can do as Muslims here in America.
Where can people find your website?
They can find two websites. MuslimsForBush.com highlights why we like President Bush a lot and our best debate points on that. Our new website is going to be launched pretty soon, a brand new version of it. You can find that at MuslimsForAmerica.us, and you're going to see information there on how you can start your own caucus. You don't have to be Muslim to join. You can be a non-Muslim. The main thing is, if you start a caucus, you just bring officials in from any party to talk about issues that are important to Muslims, which would probably be foreign policy and civil liberty issues.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was interesting, and the sound quality is awfully good for something that costs $200 and fits in the palm of your hand.
It wasn't. It's great for doing interviews on the fly like that.
Well, we hope you liked it, and we'll be back with another podcast whenever we feel like it. You can check for updates at instapundit.com or drhelen.blogspot.com. You can subscribe via the RSS feed, and you can subscribe via iTunes, which a lot of people are doing since we're now number 6 on the talk radio podcast charts at iTunes. Thanks.
See you next time.